Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
For the best in morning radio, tune in to Sam in the Morning with Charlotte. Only on LA Talk Radio.
And good morning and welcome to Tuesday, July 22nd. We're back in the studio.
Good morning.
We love being in the studio, don't
we?
Well, what are we going to say? We hate coming here. It's expected, right?
That'll definitely make everyone tune off right now.
Yeah. I know. What a way to invite listeners, huh? We don't want to be here. We're here reluctantly. Well, good morning, everybody. Welcome to the show. Hi, Charlotte.
How are you?
Good, good. We have an awesome guest in the studio returning from last week, and we'll get to her in a few minutes. And this is going to be a fun show, so you can count on that.
Definitely.
And so the war is going on in the Middle East now. The biggest news today is that U.S. airlines are suspended from flying to Israel. I mean,
to Israel. Oh boy.
Yeah. I know, that's like a big deal, you know, it's a very big deal. I remember in past wars, planes still flew in and out.
Yeah.
So this is pretty serious. But they're saying only for the next 24 hours and then they'll see what happens.
So they think something big's going to happen in the next 24 hours?
Well, it's just that the fighting is intensified and they're probably thinking that, because some rockets are hitting Israel. I mean, just imagine out of thousands of rockets, maybe a couple really hit, you know, because of the Iron Dome.
Right.
And they have all these rockets shooting down rockets.
Right.
So there's not a lot of damage and stuff from that or a lot of people hurt. And I think that saves a lot of lives, you know, because imagine if a rocket really killed a lot of people in Tel Aviv or something, or Jerusalem, Israel would use no restraint at all. You know, I mean, it would be like, so you'd have a lot of dead people on both sides.
Yeah, completely. Where's your family?
My family is outside of Tel Aviv, a little north of Tel Aviv, and but nobody's safe anymore.
Right.
Yeah. So, so that's what's going on there. And, you know, I mean, the thing is, there's been like 20 some Israeli soldiers dead and Israel, everyone that dies is a big deal, you know, because it's such a small, close
society
right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, so there's a lot of that going on, but what are you going to do? You know, and they actually show the tunnels that they build under hospitals and schools and things like that, you know, and I'll tell you why they do this because look, When you're like a small terrorist group, you know you're not going to beat Israel, right? Mm-hmm. So why even start a war with them?
Right.
It's because they're starting a war in the media. And what they're doing is they figure the more civilians, the more Palestinian civilians that die, the greater leverage they have.
Yeah.
But the thing is that so they're sacrificing their own people, you know, in order to advance their goals.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and many people don't realize that, you know. That's why I posted something on Facebook that Clinton actually spoke out loud and said the exact same thing.
I read that.
Yeah. You know, so it's not like I'm making it up. I mean,
when leaders sacrifice their people to push themselves further forward for what they may think.
Right.
I think that just says a lot for that society that they will, I mean, they lose their men to hopefully get them higher, but I mean, it's your men that are fighting for you,
right?
But you're willing to sacrifice them.
Exactly. You know, and that's the thing is that it's totally the opposite in Israel. So when people put us on the same scale, it really bothers me because there's no comparison at all, you know, but, I just hope it ends well. And, you know, I mean, the thing is, if Israel destroys their infrastructure, then that would help for a while, probably keep some quiet there.
Right.
But. So anyway, so that's going on. And also, get this thing. It's like, I think every woman's nightmare is to go to the gynecologist and have the woman, photographed or something or videotaped, right? I mean, this is like the ultimate shock, right? Well, apparently this hospital discovered that a doctor secretly photographed his patients.
It was a guy.
And as many as 8,000 women and girls were included in the case. Yeah. I mean, how do you see that many patients in your life? you know. But apparently he was fired after 25 years. And when this was discovered, he committed suicide.
Wow.
Yeah. Which is probably the appropriate ending for this guy. But yeah, you know, I mean, the thing is, they found computers full of pictures and videos. And so he confessed and killed himself after that.
Wow.
So yeah, I mean, you know, you think gynecologist is like the people you can trust the most.
Yeah, you feel, you know, safe there. Yeah,
you definitely really do. I mean, you have to feel safe. I can't imagine where else you'd feel so vulnerable than mm-hmm. to be lying on that chair with your legs spread. You know, I mean, my God, you know, there's nothing more vulnerable than that.
Yeah, completely.
And you know, and to feel totally violated by this man that you're trusting mm-hmm. is terrible.
Where was that?
This was in, well, John Hopkins Health System. I don't know where that is. Why are they not even saying this? I don't know. I don't know where it is. But does it really matter? I don't know. Yeah, it's amazing. They're not saying where it was, huh? I'm looking everywhere. Maybe deep inside the article, but I'm not seeing it.
Yeah, I can't see it either.
At any rate.
I just Googled John Hopkins. Hmm.
Oh, you even Googled that
and
you can find it. Oh, wow. Okay, well, so, yeah, so the hospital
Baltimore.
Is going to pay... Baltimore?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So the hospital is going to pay $190 million, which I'm sure is not a lot for 8,000 women. But, you know, what the hell?
Yeah,
yeah.
I guess.
Make some women... make some money off of that, you know? I mean, my God, you were violated, you know?
Seriously.
Yeah.
But, and then it's worse because you don't even know.
Right.
And now it's...
Right.
And I mean, when did it happen? When was the photos taken?
Right.
Yeah.
That's why I'm telling you, you never know who those perverts are. You know, they could be your neighbor next door. They could be family.
Yeah.
You know, you never know.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what's scary about this,
yeah,
you know.
Completely.
You don't know people.
Seriously.
I'm telling you, wow. And finally, I just wanted to talk about this real quick. I guess they've been talking about an Apple iWatch. Or something. So they're mm-hmm. starting to release some sketches of it. They're not sure that it's it. But, I mean, it looks pretty cool. If that's it, then it's pretty thin. This is something I would wear. All the watches out there today, I'm not going to wear. They're too big. And you need the phone to work with it.
Right.
Like the Samsung and stuff.
Yeah.
They're saying Apple's is you're going to be able to put your own songs and everything on there without having the phone around. So that would be cool, you know.
That's pretty impressive.
It's probably good
for completely separate.
Yeah, you know, and it'll probably be good for athletes and things like that,
yeah,
you know, where you measure your steps and distance and things like that, you know.
Yeah, for sure.
That'll be awesome. So anyway, so that's that. There's a lot in the news, but I think more importantly, we have a very fascinating guest that was here last week, and her name is Laurel House. Welcome to the show, Laurel.
Thank you.
Of course. And you were here last week.
Yes.
With me. And you guys were promoting the dating debate,
the
right?
The Great Love Debate.
The Great Love Debate.
Which was last week.
Right.
Yeah.
So tell us how that went.
You know, it was really interesting. There were, I think, 8 different experts with very different opinions and 400 singles listening to what we decided was the reason why they were all single. And it was more than anything, I think it was a singles party. Because it was the after party that was fantastic.
Right.
But it was interesting to hear a lot of the women in the audience talking about such superficial issues.
Really?
More so than any other city that has the Great Love Debate has been
me.
In. Yeah, it was. They were talking about, well, you know, what about the car and what about, you know, what I wear? It was just... It was so surface. It was killing the dating experts on stage.
Wow.
And one of them finally said, where is the heart in dating? Mm. All we're talking about is a superficial. And really, at the end of the day, that doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. So what is it that matters? What do you actually need in a relationship? And how do you tap into the heart and get beyond all this superficial bullshit? And
right.
So that was, it was very interesting.
Yeah. So, I mean, imagine trying to date women like that, you know, I mean, you can never live up to their dreams.
Well, right. Exactly. And that's why it's dating. I call it dating strategically. So it's how to have conversations very strategically to extract substance out of the woman instead of just focusing on the superficial, which is difficult, I think, innately in LA because we are so focused on how we look, how we dress, what kind of car, what kind of job. And we tend to forget about what actually matters, even friendships. I mean, women, Charlotte, right? We talk about not I don't, and you probably don't either, but we hear a lot of conversations that just are stupid.
And so bitchy.
Bitchy. Yes, it's true. I mean, it's, and it was the same or similar with men as well. But interestingly, after the debate, several men were coming up to me saying, you talked about these substantive conversations, and I honestly don't know what to do. I don't know what to say to get women to go deeper. And it's the number one reason, I believe, why so many of my female clients will come to me and say, I don't know what happened after two dates, three dates, four dates. He just disappeared and we had a great time and we had sex and it was so good. And I said, did you reveal anything? Were you vulnerable? Did you get, did you have any substantive conversation, anything of depth? And she was like, no, because why would I do that? He doesn't deserve it yet. I don't trust him yet. And that was what was really interesting.
Right.
So how do you think, because I mean, trust is a big thing.
Yes.
Especially for women to open up. They feel
well,
like
we were just talking about this gynecologist. So yeah, it absolutely is a big thing.
Yeah. So how do women get the trust quickly and feel comfortable enough to be able to explore and be vulnerable?
Well, what I say is get raw on the first date. And that doesn't mean get raw sexually. It means get raw emotionally. And what you're doing is you're going into the date knowing what areas you're comfortable talking about your vulnerability. So basically, you go in with set stories. So there are stories that show and tell what your core values are. So you might talk about something that you were ashamed of, but that you ended up overcoming, and you're stronger now because of it. So you're not lying there naked on the table and, you know, or puking up all of your baggage. That's not what you should be doing. It's not a therapy session. Right. But you are going to be saying, this happened to me. It's I call it a you conversation, the letter U. So you start up as a high, how, you know, you've had so many amazing experiences and you were in Palau one time and wow, how incredible. And then you go down and that's where you get vulnerable. So you dip down for a second and then you go back up and I'm such a better person now because of it.
Mm. Is it a way when... Because I feel like a lot of men say, oh, well, I just broke up with so-and-so and I just did this. And it's all about the ex. Is that something to kind of stay away from, even though that may be their vulnerability spot?
Actually, ex talk is a good thing to talk about on the first date. You don't want to go into great detail. You don't want to sound like you're pining after the ex. You don't want to sound like you are bitter about the ex. You just want to be able to take responsibility of the mistakes that you made and mention the things that happened as well. So yeah, that is an area of vulnerability, but you don't want to sit and dwell on it. It needs to be, this happened, it was really hurtful. And in that it was really hurtful, be honest about it. Why it was hurtful, how you realized these things about yourself because of it, and now how you're a better person. So the ex talk can be extremely revealing, both for men and women. It also sets a precedent. It's saying, I've dated these kinds of people. It can actually make a guy feel good about himself. If a woman is saying, I've dated CEOs and rock stars and billionaires, and now I'm on a date with you. And he's like, wow, like I must be in that type of group then. Right. So you automatically elevate him. It also, you're not going to sit and talk about all of your horrible exes. You want to talk about some of your great exes. Mm. Because a guy is also going to say, wow, this chick only dated assholes. Mm. And now I'm a nice guy. I don't think that she can handle me. Mm. And it's a huge mistake. Because women oftentimes will go and like, they'll be bitching about their exes and talking about all these mean guys because they're trying to get the sympathy from nice guy. Huge mistake.
Really?
Huge mistake.
So it's not going to make him feel better if he knows the others were assholes?
Maybe mention one asshole, because you do want to tap his heart and his protectiveness, because that's automatically going to make him feel a little bit more for you. Mm. But then you talk about all the great guys. And, you know, this guy, I went on this amazing vacation and I did these incredible things. So basically how you became a better person or a more expanded, dynamic, layered person because of your exes. But again, you're not sitting here talking about them on and on.
Yeah,
on,
exactly.
On.
Because, you know, I don't know that I would want to know about all the trips and stuff she took, because then I'm like, I can't make her happy. I don't have this kind of money.
But you can't just talk about the money. It needs to be the other things as well that actually, again, that actually matter, the substantive topics.
Exactly.
But it's what you're doing is you're setting a precedent. So I call it, I'll show you mine, then you show me yours. And that's how you have the vulnerability conversation. So you reveal something that's slightly vulnerable. You've already decided what the story is. You know how deep you're going to go. You've already framed this story. You say the story, and then you say, so what about you? Have you ever felt this whatever? Because once you both share vulnerability, you've connected on a very deep level that actually matters. And now your heart is open, because if you're vulnerable, your heart opens automatically. If your heart's open, you can actually feel for someone. If you're talking about substantive bullshit, then you can't feel. Your heart is closed, right. And you wonder why you don't feel. Why you're like, nah, there's nothing there. Right. Because you didn't open your heart. Because all you talked about was the surface layer. Who cares?
Yeah, that's true. Now, I also found that talking about family and stuff is a good thing as well, because they get to learn a little bit about you.
Absolutely. Know? Then you're expressing your core values. Right. The purpose of a first date is to see if there is any chance of you having a connection and a possibility of having a future. But it's also about revealing your core values. Who are you at your core? What is your essence? What makes you tick? What do you believe in? Because if your core values are very different from my core values, no, it doesn't matter how hot we both are, how much chemistry we have, this is not going to be a match.
It's not
going to
work out. Yeah.
So you need to, if family is one of your core values, if it's important to you, absolutely talk about family. Yeah. But talk about stories. Right. And if you're a story, being a storyteller is essential when you're dating. So learn how to be a storyteller and bring up specific details. In your story, you want to make sure that you are eliciting emotion and that you're painting pictures so that the person who you're talking to actually feels like they're experiencing that with you.
Right. Yeah. And probably not just go on and on with your stories. No. It should probably be more like a response to questions and things like that.
And asking questions. Right. It's a show and tell.
Exactly.
You know, I'll show you mine, you show me yours. This is my story. Now, what about you? Do you have a similar story? Great. Oh, that reminds me of this story. What about you? So it's back and forth and back and forth. It's a conversation.
Right.
It's not a speech.
Yeah. Well, for those of you just joining us, we're talking to Laurel House, and she's a dating expert, and obviously she knows just about anything about love and dating. And things like that. And so we're talking about the great love debate that happened last week. And so did you guys conclude anything? I mean, why are people single?
In LA.
Right. There's never a conclusion at the end, because what was also interesting is a lot of the women there weren't asking questions. They were venting.
Really?
So the audience members were like, I have a question. So this guy, I mean, on and venting about all of the assholes. And it was just, do you have a question? Or are you just, you know, is this your time to talk? So my extraction of why people are single in LA is because they're superficial. And maybe they aren't superficial at their core, but they feel like that's what they should be. People who are thinking, well, this is how I should act, so that's how I'm going to act. But I know there's substance there.
Right.
They're just too afraid to expose
exactly. it. Exactly. You know, so I guess the reputation is true, though, about people in LA. And I think, and that's the thing. I think the place makes you what you are in a way. Because the thing is that many people come here from all over the world.
Yes.
From places that are not superficial.
Right.
And then they come here and they become ones.
Yeah. What's interesting for me, I was born in LA. I was born in Santa Monica. So when people are like, everyone in LA is superficial, I sort of do get my defenses up because I was born here. But what's interesting for me is all of my friends who are from, not all, most of my friends who are from LA are actually very good human beings that expose their vulnerabilities, that are honest, that are genuine and authentic. So, and I think it's because we were raised around it. We don't care about the celebrity. We have become numb to that stuff. But the people who come here, they think it's like how many people are in relationships too. I think you want me to be this way, so I'm going to be this way because I think that's how I should be. But no one wants you to be that way.
Right, exactly.
The idea that people think how they should act. In
LA. Right. I think I should be perfect, so I'm going to act perfect. But what is perfect?
Right.
Is perfect just like a facade? Is it a Barbie doll? Is that what perfect is? No, it's not. It's boring. It makes you forgettable.
Right. So are you saying that this happens like in all age groups and stuff? It's not just like the young people that are trying to find themselves and so forth. You're saying even older people will still try to be what they think people want them to
absolutely.
Be.
Especially, or not especially, but oftentimes the older people who are back on the market or maybe have never been in a relationship, they just don't know what to do. Mm. So they're doing what they think that they've been conditioned to believe that they should do. Right. And that's why actually a lot of my clients are in their late 40s, even in their 50s and 60s. And they're coming, many of them never married, and coming to me really? Saying, I don't know what to do. Yeah. I have no idea how to do this dating thing. I don't know who I should be. And I have to teach them, be you. And I don't know who I am. It's very interesting. At the very beginning of coaching, I say, who are you? And they'll say, I'm a mom. I'm a business person. Okay, is that who you are? Is that what defines you and gives you shape as a human being? And that's the problem. We're all walking around not knowing who we are. Mm-hmm. So how can we be our authentic self if we don't know what we stand for, if we don't know what our core values are?
That's true.
So you define who you are by your core values. Yes. And things like that.
Exactly. So the core values could be compassion, fun, adventure, self-empowerment, family. It's all of these types of things, and those are what define you. Those are the things that make, that are unshakable at your core. What's interesting is many of your core values are actually things that you have a weakness around, but you know that if you strengthen that, you'll be your best self. So the goal is to make you your best self so that you can go out and attract someone else who is their best self. Because oftentimes, you know, I'll have clients who are like, I always attract assholes. I attract people who are mean to me. I attract, and I say, okay, well, let me tell you something. It's not them. It's right. You.
Yeah.
So what is it about you that's attracting assholes? What do you think about yourself? Do you think that you deserve a really great guy? Do you think that you're pretty awesome? No, I don't think I'm that great. Mm. Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. What do you bring to the table? Well, I'm hot. Oh, really? Is that enough?
Yeah.
Well,
how no, long but is I'm, that going to really last?
Right. Okay. But there has to be more than hot.
Right.
Because hot is also forgettable. I mean, how many hot chicks have you been with or dated? And you're like, after a while, it's just, she's just another hot fit chick.
Yeah.
No big deal. You
nothing
don't remember
else
her.
To it. No
nothing
brain.
Else. Yeah. You're forgettable. Last thing someone wants to be called is forgettable.
but
if you don't reveal something, if you don't reveal your vulnerability, you are forgettable. And that's the problem.
Right.
And that's why guys get bored too quickly.
Sounds good. Now, so you have two websites people can follow. You have a website called screwingtherules.com.
Yes.
And then there's also a site, laurelhouse.com. So you guys can check out both and follow us and things like this, because there's a lot to talk about. And so the party was great afterwards, you say.
Yeah, it was a singles mixer. It was like a huge singles mixer, because you know that everyone there is single.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good thing.
It's like, I mean, there were a couple of people in relationships who were just go and wing chicking, but most people were single. So it was fun. The one thing we didn't dive into, which I was bummed about a little bit, was sex. Mm-hmm. Because it's one of the things that I really like to talk about. I mean, my brand is called Screwing the Rules, and I am very... I don't believe in conventional, traditional styles of dating. And a lot of my beliefs are edgy. But I think it's actually a good thing, because it's about being true to you. And I think we talked about a little bit on last show about sex on the first date, and when is it okay to have sex. And that's another huge issue that can be unwrapped that we didn't discuss at the Great Love Debate, which I think needed to be talked about.
Did we talk about that?
I think we briefly touched on it.
I don't remember at all.
What are your views on that?
Yeah. On sex on the first date?
Yeah.
If you want to have it, have it.
Oh, yeah, that's right. We did talk about it. Now so, I remember, because of your response.
Because it's not, I should not dictate if you should have sex, just like I should not dictate what religion you're going to be. If you want to have sex and you are sober and you have opened your mouth before you opened your legs, then have sex. Mm. But one of the things is that you need to be aware of how you react after sex. So there are some women and some men that you have sex and you are instantly like needy.
Mm.
You're like, well, now we're in a relationship. You know, yeah. It's just these, you get very connected, and that happens because of the chemicals that are released during sex. But not all people are like that. Mm. So if you are not that person who immediately becomes attached, and you can have sex because it's fun, because it feels good, because it is a connector, great. Or if you've pre-qualified the guy or woman well enough, which means you ask very specific strategic questions beforehand, you've had long conversations, you go on the date and you know each other. Like, you feel like I've known you forever, and you have a date that's 6 hours, 8 hours, and at the end of the date, you're like, we're, like, basically in a relationship already, and you want to have sex? Have sex! Okay. But make sure that you talk about what is your dating purpose. And, you know, if you are comfortable enough to open your legs, you should be comfortable enough to open your mouth first. Mm. So you should be able to say, you know, I'm looking for a serious relationship. Is that what you're looking for? No, you're just looking to have fun. Okay, good to know. So now I can make an educated decision in terms of if I want to have sex with you or not.
Right.
Do you think that men lose respect for women that have sex on the first date?
Some do, but I think that men say that more than they actually believe it, because it is circumstantial. So yeah, if you go out on a coffee date or a drinks date and you have two drinks and you get hammered, mm-hmm. and that's your first date and then you have sex, he will lose respect for you. Right. Yes, absolutely. He did not know you. You did not know him. And you just decided to spread it after two drinks because you were drunk. Well, you shouldn't be drunk after two drinks, but if you are, then that's fine. Yeah. But yes, if a man is actually invested because you've had vulnerability conversations, you've expressed who you actually are, you've gotten raw emotionally before you got raw physically, then he shouldn't lose respect for you. And if he does, then I would question him.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it doesn't happen. You know, I mean, for me, it's, if anything, it's like great, you know, because there's no games. There's no nothing.
Exactly.
There's immediate connection, immediate attraction. And why not? You know, I mean, it's just like it's wild and it's passionate and things like that. So it's not necessarily that you lose respect, you know, because I think at the same time, token, if you're going to lose respect, then the second date is probably also not a great thing.
Right.
Because, you know, you're saying, well, you know, if you're the person who says, well, this woman should not go to bed with anybody before she gets married, then obviously this is not going to work out for you.
You know when I think people lose respect? Mm. When they're following the rules. Mm. Or when they're playing games.
Right.
Because in their mind, you know, if you have rules that you are following, if someone doesn't follow that rule, you immediately judge them.
Mm. Right.
No matter what that rule is. And if the other person knows what the rules are, I'm playing by these rules. You don't know what the rules are that we're playing by. And now you've crossed those lines. Well, okay, sorry, I wasn't aware.
Yeah.
So if someone is playing those rules and those games of five dates before sex, then let me know. Let's have a conversation
exactly.
that's what you're following, and then let's talk about it. Because I totally agree with you, Sam. I mean, it's like, it's exciting. It's passionate. If you are in that place of passion and thrill, and you're so connected and you're not wasted and you can actually think clearly this is a good decision, then go with it.
Exactly. You know, because, I mean, if it's so passionate, then we get like almost like to the core of the act, okay? And suddenly they're like, oh, no, it's too soon. That would be terrible.
But it feels like terrible. A game. And then you have to question, are you deciding that you don't want to do it because you are following someone's rules? Or are you deciding that you don't want to do it because you don't want to do it? If you don't want to do it, fine.
Yeah.
But if it's because...
But don't bring me all the way to the water and not let me drink.
Right, exactly. And don't regret it the next day.
Right.
That's the other thing. If you know you're going to regret it the next day, or if you're in this position of, I don't know, should I? I don't know. Oh, God, I don't know. Should I do it? Don't do it.
Yeah.
Because that is sure regret. And then there are the women who do it and afterwards, oh, God, I shouldn't have done that. Well, thanks a lot. Yeah. You just made him feel really good about himself. So that's why it's just the games in L.A. are so... awful.
Mm.
And the rules that people, well, I can't call him. I can't call her on a Wednesday for a date on a Friday. Bullshit.
Yeah.
Call. If you are available, call. And then when she pretends that she's busy, no.
Yeah.
If you're busy, first of all, be busy. Have a life. And if you're not busy and that night, go out.
Yeah.
Spontaneity is very sexy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It really is. Well, we're talking to Laurel House, for those of you just joining us, and she's going to help you when you crave a real connection, right? That's what the website
says. It's about going deep, you know? Uh-huh. And I think that's – I had a client the other day who said, you know, it was the scenario I was talking about. She went on four or five dates with this guy. They had a great connection. They had sex. It was really good sex.
Right.
And then he suddenly was not very interested. – And it wasn't because of the sex. It was because she was uninteresting. So if you are uninteresting, how are you going to keep a man interested?
Right.
But is that because, is he now no longer interested because they've had sex?
No, it's because the relationship went deep physically, but it never went deep emotionally.
Right.
Okay. And that's the problem. Yeah. And again, that comes back to, because I said to her, did you open up? Were you vulnerable? No. Why? I didn't trust him yet. But you trusted him enough to open your legs.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. And that's the problem. So he was bored.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he wanted to go and be in a relationship. He ended up in a relationship immediately after. You know, he started dating a girl. This was a couple of weeks ago that I had this chat with this chick. And he started dating a girl immediately after. And like, boom, relationship. So those guys were like, no, I'm really not into a relationship. I think it might be actually you. Because if a guy meets the right woman, he will be ready for a relationship.
Right.
Yeah. For sure.
He'll want to stay with her. Yes. And that's really the reason I think people should stay with each other and get married, is if you feel this is the person you want to spend the rest of your life with, you know. Don't marry for because you want to have a family, you want to have kids, the family is pressing you, you're getting older and you feel your biological clock is moving. All these things don't work, you know.
Yeah.
The only thing that works is, I can't live without this person.
Right.
Right. Exactly. It's not, do I want to be without him? It's, can I be without him?
Right.
And do I want to be with him? It's not, do I want to be with him? It's, can I be without him? But right. But the biological clock, though, that's a real thing. Mm. I mean, that's a real thing for women. And it's not just, I want to have a kid. It's, I want to be able to have a kid.
Right.
And women who are in their 30s, and it's real. Will I lose my opportunity to have a child? And if you are thinking that, don't just go and get married and knocked up because you feel like, because it's out of desperation.
Right.
Go and freeze your eggs instead.
Right.
I did. I froze my eggs last year. I'm 36.
Really cool.
And it was, I've been married twice.
Uh-huh.
And I was married at 21 and again at 24. Mm. And I want to get married again, but last year on my birthday, when I was turning 36, I thought, you know, I'm not in a relationship right now. I was in a relationship, but not in a relationship that I thought would lead to marriage.
Right. Okay.
So I decided I need to take care of this because I don't want to lose my opportunity. I know for sure I want to have children.
Right.
And it's a scary thing. It's a scary thing for women to have to go to. And freezing my eggs did not feel good emotionally or physically or in my bank account. In any way, did not feel good.
Right.
But I know now that I'm okay. So I don't have that desperation. And what's interesting is men actually like to know that a woman has frozen their eggs. Because women, a lot of women, I have clients who have frozen their eggs also, and they say, well, is that unsexy when I go on a date and I say I froze my eggs? And I say, no, it's a relief for the guy. He's like, all right, she's not going to be pushing me to have a kid immediately because she's already taken care of that business. She's taken care of herself.
Right.
And that's what you have to do.
When did you realize that you were an expert in this field? Because you were married at 21 and 24. Was it after that, after you'd been through two divorces?
So I got married at 21 because my parents were married at 21. And I thought, I want what they have. They're happy. They have an active sex life. Like, I want the fairy tale.
Wow, really?
So, yeah.
So you felt that you were ready to be married at 21?
I was always much more adult for my age.
Right.
I've always been an adult. I was a mini adult growing up.
Yeah.
So I did feel I was ready to get married, but I wasn't ready to get married because I didn't know me yet. We divorced within 6 months, and I ended up getting engaged to a guy when I was 24. He proposed after 3 months. We really didn't know each other very well. We were married within a year, and we tried to make it work for 3 years or so and then divorced.
Did you marry him? The same reason you wanted to be married?
Had actually gotten out of a really bad relationship before him with a guy who, when he broke up with me, he was cheating on me. He was a director. And he told me that I was the worst head and lay he had ever had.
Wow. How great, huh?
Thanks very much. Not only are you cheating on me, breaking up with me in the middle of the night over the phone, but you're
making me feel like shit about myself.
Wow. So I was shredded. I mean, I was that girl who just had zero confidence and did not feel like I was good enough and did not feel loved.
How long were you seeing him?
A year.
A year?
Yeah.
And after a year, he decided he's going to tell you that?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, it was not nice.
No.
I was also very insecure in the relationship, and I caused a lot of the breakup as well. So people, you need to be aware when you have a breakup of what you are responsible for.
Right.
But I just felt really shredded, and I didn't feel loved, and this guy loved me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wanted, and he was so nice, and he came from a good family, and he was handsome, and I was following the rules.
Mm.
The rules of keeping my information tight, not really getting vulnerable, and, you know, being the perfect girl and getting a great guy who's perfect also to love me. And that's what I got. And he loved me, and we got married, and we had a white picket fence and a nice house with a red door and a dog. And it was like the quintessential life. And I was unhappy because I wasn't being my authentic self, and I left. And since then, I've been proposed to 9 times. I got engaged a 3rd time. I knew that I didn't want to do it, make another mistake. So I ended up breaking that off.
So, and you've been proposed to 11 times.
Nine times total.
Oh, nine times total.
Yeah,
okay.
9 times total.
Wow.
So I realized I was doing something right. And this entire time, I had been writing for magazines. I was writing as a healthy living expert and writing about sex and relationships for Playboy and Men's Journal and FHM. So I had always been in the sex and dating and relationship world, but not as a coach.
Mm.
I started doing videos. I have my 5th book is coming out in December, Screwing the Rules. And I had videos on YouTube based on my book. So my last book was called Quickie Chicks Cheat Sheet. And one topic was dating. And I was giving these quick dating tips on YouTube. And people really liked those tips. And people would email me asking for advice. And I was spending, you know, sometimes entire days giving advice for free, and realized I could get paid for this. So
it's true.
So I became a coach, and my first client was a woman who I actually helped to lose weight. She needed to lose a lot of weight, and I got her on a healthy living plan. I'm a certified personal trainer as well. And then she hadn't dated in about 20 years.
Mm.
And so I helped her get online. I took photos of her. I got her online profile going, and she had a couple of dates. And she came to me. This was my first client. She came to me and said, you know, we're at this point where I think we need to do physical stuff, and I don't know how to do it.
Wow.
And I was like, come over, bring some cucumbers, different sizes, and we're going to learn how to do oral sex. So she came over, and I taught her all of these different, you know, strategies and techniques. And she went out there, had another date the next night. She called me the next day. Oh my God, it went so well. Thank you, success. I think we're going to have sex tomorrow night. And I was like, I cannot do a physical example of what to do, but I can tell you what to do.
Right.
And she had sex, and it was great. And so then I started to develop strategies on how basically to translate what I had been doing in my personal relationships, and I translated that into my coaching. And so I'm a dating coach, but a flirting and femininity expert, and I'm also known as a heartbreak coach.
Okay. And so I just wanted to ask real quick, so what were you doing before that?
Well, I'm a writer by trade.
Okay.
So I write books, and I was writing for magazines. I've also been a television spokesperson for a ton of products, from KY Jelly to Hoover vacuum cleaners.
Really?
I do a lot of TV, and I sort of cobbled, as my dad says, cobbled together a career. I was what's known as a entrepreneurial journalist. So I started as a writer journalist, and then I moved into all of the different elements, because as a writer, you're oftentimes automatically considered an expert.
Right.
And when I became a writer at 22, I was an editor for Fit magazine, and then I helped launch Fit Yoga magazine, and shortly thereafter I started writing for Playboy. And they had said to me, the editors always said, well, what are you an expert in? Because that's what I would write about. And at 22, I am an expert in nothing. I'm sorry. I just got a divorce, so maybe I'm an expert in divorce. But I'm an expert in nothing. So I just thought, well, I'm an expert in the things that I love.
Right.
I'm an expert in sex and travel and fitness. So I became a travel writer and wrote about sex and about fitness. And that was sort of how it happened. And then I what I had to do was really hone in and focus. So I started just focusing on dating. But the fact is, all of those other elements contribute to being successful in dating, because that is having a life. Right. So the travel, the learning how to tell stories about travel, the experiencing, expanding yourself, being healthy and fit and feeling beautiful from the inside out. These are all elements to being a successful dater and successful in a relationship.
Yeah. Now, let me ask you this, because, and I don't mean this to sound shallow, and I hope it's not. That's why I don't discuss it a lot with people, because it involves, you know, how I feel. But the thing is this, I'm back on the market, you know, after two divorces and everything. I'm 54 years old, and I find that I'm not attracted physically to women my age, you know.
Right.
And I find that many women have the same, many men feel the same way, but they don't really express it or anything. And it really interferes, because the thing is that for younger women, you're not the ideal guy, because, you know, they want to start a family, they want to have kids, they, you know, like in the 30s or early 40s, they want to start a family. So your goals are different, you know. At 54, you're like, wow, you know, I'm doing great, but you're going to have grandchildren in a few years, you know. So it's, so it creates a problem for me, you know. I try to go like on a match.com or something, and I get all these like women that are even older than I am. And I'm like, you know, I'm not attracted to this. So, and it's really not a, you know, I mean, I'm trying to analyze it and everything, but it's not, I guess it has to do with like taste, you know, like it, when you have taste in cars and clothes and things like that, you also have a taste in women, you know?
You know,
Before I finish, there was, and this is a controversial thing. I mean, I can share it with some of my women friends, but I know even they sometimes feel like, what the hell's wrong with this guy? There was a post on Facebook going around. Everybody was posting it about this woman who connected with this guy. You know, also I think in their 50s, connected with this guy, and then he finally told her he's not attracted to her, and he told her why. And the thing is that this created such a controversy and stuff, because, well, the way she told it, he sounded like an asshole.
Okay.
But I could relate to the way he felt.
Yes.
I would never have handled it the same way.
Yeah.
So what do I do? I mean, what do I do?
Well, it's very, very common. So as you said, it's common. I am 36. Right. I've actually dated men in their 40s, 50s, and even early 60s. Yeah. So you're not...
But you wouldn't marry them, would you?
That's not necessarily true, actually.
No?
I consider myself to be an equal opportunity dater. Okay. So I tend to not date people who are younger than me. I actually tend not to date people my age. And the reason for that is I have always felt older. I've always felt more mature. And I have looked for men. Now, this is just me personally, but then I'll talk overarching. So I have always looked for men who I can learn from, who I admire, and who I can extract something out of their life experiences to contribute into my own.
Right.
That has always been fascinating for me, which is why I have tended to date either extremely successful or a bit older men.
Right.
And some of these men have had young children, and some of them have woken up at 55 and thought, oh my God, where's my family? Where's my wife? Where are my kids? And suddenly they're going and looking for people my age who can hold a conversation and can still have children.
Exactly.
So there is that situation.
Right.
And then there are the men who are in their 40s and have young kids. And that would still work for someone like me who does want to have children.
Right.
The reason why you're attracted to women who are younger than you isn't because there's something wrong with you. It's because a lot of the women who are in their 50s, and this is not across the board, but a lot of them are jaded, don't have the youthful exuberance. So it's the youthful exuberance that I believe is what's so sexy about younger women.
Right.
Yes, there is something about their bodies, but the fact is that a woman of any age can work out. Is she going to have the elasticity in her skin as a younger woman? No, she's not.
Right.
But she can still keep up her body. She can still keep up her style and her youthful exuberance.
That's true. Yeah.
That's what's sexy. I have a client who is 47 and... beautiful body, the most amazing energy. I love this woman. I have another client who's 57, beautiful body, her energy, like I'm getting, I get to talk to her today at 1 o'clock. I cannot wait. She's not in this country, so it's okay. She's in Switzerland. But she's just, her energy is so beautiful, and man, does she attract men.
Really?
And it's because she just radiates. Mm. And that's what so many women lack. You know, the women who are in their 40s and 50s, and sometimes women who are in their 30s as well, are just bitches. Yeah. You know, they're tough. They're jaded. They can do it themselves. They don't need a man. And it's that energy that is not sexy to a man who has, who is out of a marriage, who has grown kids. You don't want to deal with another chick who's like, ha, you know, I don't need you. Okay, you're right. And I don't want you. But I bet that if you found a woman in her late 40s who had that great energy of a 30-year-old who wasn't like bubbly stupid, but but was fun and exuberant. Right. I bet you would find her sexy. Mm. I bet you would.
Yeah, probably. But I think it's also like on a primal level that I think, you know, young women are viewed as productive, you know, during their productive years.
Absolutely.
And, you know, and fertile and all that.
Yes.
Kind of, I think that's like on a primal level, and men don't outgrow that.
Totally.
But at the same time, I think the problem I'm having also is I haven't embraced my aging yet.
Yes. Well, you also have been married for quite a while. So when you get out of the marriage, you're almost going back to when you, how old you were prior to the marriage.
That's true, because you haven't had any experience.
Exactly. And the last time you were dating that age. That's what you were looking for. So when I was in my 20s, did I find 50-year-olds attractive?
No.
Not really. Maybe a little, but not really. My taste has aged with my age.
Right.
And that tends to happen. But if you stop and you get married for 20 years, you sort of freeze what your taste is. That's and now you're like, well, let's go back to dating the old-fashioned way.
Right.
Which is not about online dating. And it's not about dating a 50-year-old. Like, what? Why would I date someone this old? Well, that's because, sorry, but you are. It's like reality check.
Exactly.
So
you've already lived your 20s, you know, mine.
But it's also when the younger girls are dating the other guy, the older guys, sometimes, honestly, sometimes I felt I was really into the guy and I thought he was fascinating. And when we were alone, I loved being with him. Mm. I learned from him. When we were out, I was embarrassed.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
And it's because I...
That's, again, the rules. You were worrying about what people were thinking.
I was. And it's because I do look a little bit younger than my age, I think. And I tend to wear... When I go out, I wear sundresses. And that's I'm short. I'm 5'2". So if I'm wearing flip-flops in the sundress, I look young.
Yeah.
And if I'm not fully made up, and if I'm with a mid-50s guy, I get looks.
Right.
And the last guy I was dating who was in his mid-50s, I actually was at a event. I won't say what kind. I was in an event with him. It was a very intellectually stimulating event. I loved this event. And I that's also the difference of dating older guys. You're the chances of going to those types of intellectually stimulating events are higher. So it was a book reading kind of a thing. And another guy there came up to me and said, "Oh, is this your father?"
Really? Wow.
And I thought I was going to throw up.
Yeah.
And I ended it the next day. Actually, really? I ended it that day.
Wow.
I couldn't. It just, as much as he fascinated me, there is still that social expectation
stigma
that didn't make me feel good. And as much as I'm against having that, allowing the social stigma to have such a huge effect on me, I just couldn't help it.
Yeah. No, I know, because we're part of this, you know, we're part of a society and you want to be accepted. Everybody wants to be accepted. Nobody wants to stand out as they're weird, they're unusual and all that stuff. But, you know, at the same time, people say that, you know, I mean, love has no age limit. You know,
it's true. You truly can fall in love with someone who's 20, 30 years difference, older or younger. You truly can. Right. And it's just because if you are connected. Now, there are people who are in their 40s, 50s, 60s who take care of themselves and look young. And again, youthful exuberance. So that guy I was dating, he did not have youthful exuberance. Mm. So I'm like peppy and yay and happy. And he was a definite mid-50s man.
Wow.
I mean, he did not have that spunk. Right. So I think that that is actually why the guy who was my age said, is this your father? It's because our energies did not align. However, if I was with a guy who had my energy and was also youthful, then I think that he wouldn't have said something like that because we were a match. But that's the true thing, too, for guys like you in your 50s. You take care of your body. It's important to you. You have that youthful energy. If you're looking for a woman who is in their 20s and 30s,
well, not 20s. Let's say 20s is not that appropriate.
Okay, it's not appropriate.
Although I wouldn't mind, but
it might be fun for a night until you get bored.
Exactly.
But if you're honestly looking to have a partner in a 30-year-old, a 30-something-year-old, you need to look at yourself too. Do I have youthful exuberance? Will I be able to hold up? Because let me tell you, she is making a decision to be with you because in 20 years, you are not going to have the energy that she's going to have.
Exactly.
So she's basically saying, I am going to live these amazing years with you, knowing that in 20 years, I'm going to be taking care of you.
Right. Right.
And that's a decision.
It's a big decision.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm saying, you know, it's like the usually that big an age difference, the goals are not aligned. You know, I mean, it's like, it's like, I don't want to be married. I just want to play around. But yet the women that I'm attracted to are looking to settle down.
Okay, but that's different because there are guys in their 50s who do want to get married again.
Right.
It's just you are in the phase of fun. Okay. And that's because you're out. You're recently divorced.
Right.
And that totally makes sense. You should be in the phase of fun right now.
Right. No, I mean, the thing is, I think even when I meet someone, I don't see the need to get married because I think marriage is more to build a family, to have a framework for the kids, for everybody else. I don't see a reason to get married if you're going to spend the rest of your life with that person.
Right.
Because often the marriage does drive people away. But you know what? We don't have time for your answer right now. But
was loaded.
Yeah.
It was. Because I totally disagree.
Okay. Good. Then don't forget about it. No, that's just my opinion.
It's about safety, though. It's so easy to jump out of a boyfriend-girlfriend situation. Easier to do that than it is to jump out
of
a marriage.
That's true.
It's the safety. It's the comfort. I know you're coming home to me. I know we're going to work on this relationship because it is legal.
Right.
That's why.
All right.
Okay.
Sounds good.
Okay.
Laurel House, everybody, check out her website, screwingtherules.com, dating coach. Her dating coach website is laurelhouse.com, and people can contact you and have actually like sessions with you.
Absolutely.
Like
I do dating coaching sessions on video Skype, or you can do intensives with me, which are really fun, and we dig deep.
Sounds good. Okay, Laurel, thank you so much for enlightening us. You're always a lot of fun, and we'll definitely invite you back.
Great.
And thanks everybody for listening. We got to run. Thank you, Charlotte.
Thank you.
See you tomorrow.
For the best in morning radio, tune in to Sam in the Morning with Charlotte. Only on LA Talk Radio.